Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to episode 206 of Geek Town Radio. I'm back this week after a very long time with Ross. How are you doing?
Hi, Dave. Yeah, I've missed you. How have you been?
I've been very well. It's been a few months since you've been on. We were figuring out before we came on.
Yeah, it's had a crazy ups and downs. Been on holiday, went to Tokyo recently, Dave. Very nice.
Yes. You and the half of the Geek Town staff going to Tokyo. Yes. Because yeah, Vex is out there at the moment. So
we had our annual Geek Town conference out there with Eddie Dave, as we always
yeah,
do.
Thanks.
But yeah, it's been a fun few months. Busy though. Busy.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Apart from having fun in Japan, what else have you been doing?
I got some movie and TV stuff. The first thing is we watched Detective Pikachu, which is great. It's really good. It ties into what I'll say later. There's a Bill Nye turns up who I didn't expect to be in it, and he's really good. He's pretty good. The movie isn't amazing. I think if you're into Pokemon, you'll enjoy the movie, and it's a fun movie. If you're not into Pokemon, I'd probably give it a skip because it's very, like, as a movie, it's okay. As a Pokemon movie, it's great.
Right, yeah.
Everyone's really well done.
Pokemon was slightly after my time, so I sort of completely bypassed it. And I'm aware of Pokemon, obviously.
I was going to say, there's still time for you, Dave. We can get you into it.
Yeah, so it's not really on my radar or sort of going to watch, but I will probably keep an eye out for it when it comes out on home release and maybe watch it there.
Worth a go. Another thing we watched quite recently was Always Be My Maybe on Netflix. So this is I guess you'd call it a rom-com with Ali Wong and Randall Park.
Right.
And it seems like, I don't know if you've noticed this as well, but it seems like in the last couple of years, we've had a few really good rom-coms come out.
Yeah.
So we had The Big Sick a couple of years ago.
Oh yeah,
and
that
then
was
we
brilliant.
Had,
yeah.
Like Crazy Rich Asians and that kind of, there's some really good, really funny rom-coms around.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of those. There is a special guest who I think is in the trailer, so don't watch the trailer. If you're going to watch the movie, just watch the movie. And the special guest turns up and they're really, really good. Basically, there's a celebrity in it who I didn't expect to be in it. And they're terrific. So definitely give it a watch. Always Be My Maybe on Netflix.
Okay, cool. I will really go good. Check that one out.
Cool. And finally, I imagine you'll talk about this more, Dave, but I've been watching Good Omens on Amazon.
Yes, I will talk about it more because I went to the world premiere for Good Omens and got to talk to some of the cast. And we have those interviews coming up a bit later. So I thought it was absolutely fabulous because that was always the thing, was it's such a beloved property. And there is, you know, it's 30 years old, that book. And people really, really like it. And they were all kind of very nervous about how well it's going to be received. But everybody that they'd kind of talked to seems to be very, very happy with it. And I hadn't actually read the book at that point. So it's one of those things that when you find out that there's a TV show coming, it's like, do I read the book now?
Yeah.
Or do I watch the TV series and then go and read the book? So I chose the latter. But I loved it. I saw the first two episodes at the premiere and I thought it was absolutely fabulous. And the premiere itself was crazy because it was full Leicester Square red carpet film premiere for a TV show, which they don't generally do. So, and certainly not for the launch of something like, that was really impressive. But yeah, what do you think?
I'm an episode ahead of you then, episode 3.
Yes.
And I really like it. Before this, I'd read most Terry Pratchett books, never read anything in Neil Gaiman's. And I think it feels very like a Terry Pratchett book.
Yes.
And there's like silly names and it's there's a lot going on, but it's quite funny, but it feels like it's very believable at the same time. Like it happens in our world, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
And it adds up sort of thing so far. And it feels like this could be happening, you know, or, you know, this could happen conceivably. So that, I think that's really well done. I think the main two guys are really good, David Tennant and Michael Sheen. They're really good. And their sort of relationship is really good. So if anyone doesn't know, Michael Sheen's an angel and David Tennant is like a demon. And they've been friends they've been associates for a long time.
Yes.
And they end up losing the Antichrist. The Antichrist is born and then they lose him.
Yes.
And there's a lot of other, I was surprised how much other stuff is going on around it.
Yeah.
But it's quite good. It sort of keeps tying things back together really nicely.
Yeah.
Because of the sort of religious aspects of it, like the angels and demons, and there's John Hamm who plays the angel Gabriel. That stuff's handled quite cleverly, but also there's a lot of time stuff in it as well. Like there's things about the Garden of Eden and there's,
yeah.
I think in episode 3, we see a lot of the angel and demon's relationship sort of through time, which is a really good episode. And they really seem like they don't want to, but they an unlikely friendship, Dave. They don't want to like each other, but they do.
Yeah.
And it's really, yeah, so far it's great. Can't wait to watch more. I think there's only 6 episodes. So
halfway through. There is. It's only a mini series. It's on Amazon Prime at the moment. It is coming to the BBC later on. We don't know when yet. Yeah, because it was an Amazon BBC co-production. So it will come to the BBC at some point later on. We don't know exactly when they're getting it yet, but it'll have to run out a bit on Amazon first. I do wonder whether they maybe put it out over Christmas possibly, but maybe it's got to be a bit longer than that. We'll have to wait and see.
I wonder two things, because as I say, I haven't read the book like you. I wonder if there's another book or if this is part of a series, and I wonder if there's going to be another season of this program.
I don't know. I think it's probably going to be a one-off. I don't think it's going to carry on, which is a shame, but it's based off the book, although they have made changes to it. And I mean, American Gods was a single book and that was Neil Gaiman, and they've made various seasons out of that. So I mean it's not impossible. I mean, the cast is spectacular. It is utterly ridiculous, the amount of people that show up in this. And I mean, it was after sort of David Tennant and Michael Sheen, the cast list has got like just this huge who's who of anybody that's in British TV. I mean, from all the League of Gentlemen to and American TV, actually, because it's got people like Mike McLean from Better Call Saul in it. It's just crazy number of people.
Like I said, John Hamm and Francis McDormand.
Yeah, Francis McDormand. It is just insane cast it's got. So all 6 episodes are on Amazon now, and really urge you to go and watch it. It is, I think, I've been told, a fairly faithful adaptation of the book. They have tweaked certain things, like Gabriel, I don't think was a character in the book, or was a much smaller character in the book. So they have tweaked some stuff. But yes, it is a relatively faithful adaptation, and seems to be going down very, very well. So definitely worth going to watch on Amazon.
How about you, Dave? What have you been up to?
Well, the last week I spent pretty much down in London. As you know, if you listen to the podcast regularly, I put out an interview show last week because I was still away. So I basically done 3 days at MCM and then stayed down an extra day so I could go and do the Good Omens premiere. So MCM Comic Con, that was brilliant fun. We interviewed a whole bunch of people for MCM. It was an interesting one for me this year because they had fairly limited press access. Partly because a lot of the names that they had there were quite a lot bigger, and those sort of middle tier people, there was a lot less of them. So like your random Game of Thrones actors. I mean, the 1 year where it would have been really good to talk to some random Game of Thrones actors, they didn't have them, you know? You kind of like, that's a bit weird. But they had Sebastian Stan there and David Harbour from Stranger Things and Hellboy, Sebastian Stan, Winter Soldier. Neither of those were doing press, and we weren't allowed to film their panels. So sort of from a press side of things, they weren't there as far as we were concerned. You know, I'm sure they were lovely, and I'm sure they, I know it's their management, it's not them, we know that, but yeah, that was the situation. So there's no videos or anything up of those guys. We did get the panel from Misha Collins from Supernatural. So that is now up on the YouTube channel. You can go and look, watch that. We got the team from Arrow, and Stephen Amell did a panel on his own. So did him and the team from Arrow, which is Stephen, Emily, David Ramsey, and randomly Tyler Hoechlin, who had decided to come along, even though the rest of them are all from Arrow and he's from Supergirl. But you know, right. Why not? So yeah, I mean, that was good. Got the panels for those. Again, they weren't doing press interviews, although I think that was more to do with the fact that they were so incredibly popular in terms of photos and signing things that they couldn't pull them off the floor for any length of time without a riot happening. So, right. So I think it was more that than them not wanting to do press. Yeah. So, that was nice to see those. They were on good form. Misha Collins particularly was on great form. There's a panel for Saturday and Sunday. Hollywood News Source did the Saturday panel, and we've got the Sunday panel. So worth going to check those out.
Instagram, Geektown UK Instagram's always good around Comic-Con time.
So yes. Yes, it is.
Cosplayers.
I have got a bunch of cosplay photos actually up on the website, which are the sort of semi-edited versions, but they're not like the full-blown cosplay edits. They're going up on Instagram, which is instagram.com/geektownuk. If you go and check that out, there's lots of edits going up of cosplayers on there at the moment. In terms of other interviews, we interviewed the cast of Clerks, minus Jay Muse, unfortunately, who was there but was ill. So he called off actually coming to do the press room interview, but we got the other guys from Clerks, and Kevin Smith wasn't there either, unfortunately. Some of the other guys we got from Clerks, so there's an interview up with them. The Lince kids from Walking Dead we also spoke to as well, which is Madison, Matt, and Maxon, who are the three kids who played Sophia and the young and old versions of Henry in The Walking Dead, and they were fun. They were really good fun, and really enjoyed interviewing those. So we had a little press room interview with those guys. That was really good. It's weird the entire family has ended up, well, there is one older sister who is on Under the Dome who hasn't appeared on Walking Dead. I think they should just throw her in and, like, you know, as a zombie, and maybe kill her off in one episode or something, just so they can all have been on it at some point. Yeah. So that was really good. And yeah, like I say, tons of cosplay photos, quite a lot of gaming there this time as well. I went and spoke to the guys at the Doctor Who VR game, which is coming out, called Doctor Who The Edge of Time, which puts you in the role of the companion to Jodie Whittaker's Doctor, and he's like a whole sort of adventure thing. So there's that. That was really fun. I spoke to the developers of that. There was a really good do you remember the old Wipeout video game?
Before my time, Dave?
Possibly, yes. There's been various versions of it. It was a PS4 game, and it's one of those sort of anti-grav racer things.
I do know Wipeout, sorry. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So that sort of racer game, but there is a game called Pacer, which is being released as well. They're still developing at the moment. I think it's coming out on PS4, Xbox, and PC. One of the things they're most proud of is that they've got it to 60 frames a second in 4K on console as well, which is unheard of. So that's massively impressive. But it's basically one of those sort of Wipeout anti-grav things, but there's a whole load of customization things. So you can customize, like, the cars, things, the tracks, there's a whole load of variations where the tracks are sort of day, night. You can run them backwards, forwards. You can run time trials. There's a sort of battle royale version as well, which I think is a new innovation for a racer. So it was really impressive, really, really good. And that's called Pacer. And keep an eye out for that, because that's coming out soon. The other thing I had to play around with was a thing called 1111, which is by the Sci-Fi Channel. And it is essentially a play done in VR. It's set in a futuristic city, which is 11 minutes and 11 seconds to a sort of world-ending event, and you're following these various groups of people as it comes up to the end, and some of them are trying to escape onto the last ship out there. That's sort of when the last ship leaves and the extinction event happens. So you're following these various people around, and there's sort of six main characters, and you can jump from one character to another. So you can start off following one character, and they may go off and wander into a bar, and then they talk to one of the other characters. When they start to leave, you can either continue to follow them, or you could stay in the bar and see what happens with the characters that are in there, or you could kind of go into an aerial mode and jump into a different character completely. So although it is only 11 minutes and 11 seconds, there's a good sort of couple of hours worth of messing around in gameplay or in, because you can fast forward and rewind it to different parts of the story. So you might kind of get engrossed in one conversation and end up following that to the end and following that, those people. And then you can kind of go back and jump into another bit of the story to see how maybe a particular person got to where they were and that sort of stuff. But that's coming out on various VR platforms. I think it's on PSVR, Oculus Rift, Oculus Go, Vive, Samsung Gear. It's some smartphones. It's on the Sky VR app, although I think they said it's only going to be on iPhone at the moment. It's not going to be on Android on the Sky VR app, even though the Sky VR app has an Android app. I don't think it's on there yet. But it's worth checking out, though, if you can find it somewhere. It's called 1111. That's worth looking for. And as we mentioned, load of cosplay stuff from MCM as well up on the website and the Instagram feed. So that's worth going to look for. So 3 days in that, then going over to the Good Omens world premiere, which was great. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on because we have some interviews with the guys from that coming up. In terms of TV, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. came back. I'm really liking this new season. I don't know whether you've seen any of it yet, but really interesting, slightly different direction because, you know, they've had them sort of, I mean, what started off as a sort of second tier MCU show has suddenly become this kind of thing that's gone entirely off in their own direction, and they're dealing with things in space, and they did the life model decoys, it introduced in humans, a whole bunch of things. And now I mean it's difficult to tell exactly what they're doing, but it seems to be some sort of parallel universe, because if you remember the end of last season, Coulson, he is now gone as a character, but they
again.
Yes, again. But there is somebody who looks a very lot like Phil Coulson now wandering around, but appears to be a character called Sarge. And we don't really know a lot more about him. We don't know exactly where he came from. We don't know who he is. We don't know why he looks like Coulson. So, that's kind of really interesting. And, added different members of the cast. And, really enjoying that. It's been really good. Game of Thrones documentary. Now Game of Thrones is over, although we have still got one more Game of Thrones podcast coming this week, which me and Matt will be doing. We've got a Reviewing Westeros podcast coming up, which is going to be a sort of final wrap up of everything, just sort of all eight seasons. We're going to be covering everything. So we've got that coming
podcast.
Up. Yes. We'll be kind of skipping through the seasons in that later on this week. So that's one to watch out for. But there's a great documentary that they released on Sky, and you can go and find it on the Sky box, which is sort of talking through all the behind the scenes of the last season. It's just following people round through the last season, and there's some wonderful bits, such as Kit finding out that he's the one that offs Danny. Sorry, spoilers if you haven't seen it by now. If you haven't seen it by now,
I've seen the picture on Twitter.
That's a wonderful moment because he clearly had gone into the table read without reading the script beforehand. So he sat down at the table doing the table read, and you could see him kind of covering his mouth in shock at the fact that he's the one that does it. So there's some lovely little moments in that. If you're a Game of Thrones fan, it's really, really worth watching because it's quite emotional, and just seeing them all coming to the end of it. And regardless of, I mean, I know this season's come in for some criticism, but those guys worked unbelievably hard on it, and it's nice to see some recognition for the sort of behind the scenes people, on that. So that's good.
If you're into making of documentaries, Dave, saw a documentary on YouTube called Raising Kratos, which is about the launch of God of War on the PS4. I think it was last year.
Interesting.
If you're even remotely interested in video games, I had sort of no idea of the sort of behind the scenes stuff that happens, but it's a really interesting documentary. I think it's maybe hour and a half, 2 hours, and it's all on YouTube for free. So worth a go.
Yes. And if that's in that, I imagine that it features Teok from Stargate.
Yes, it does. Yeah, because he's the voice.
He's the voice of Kratos in that.
So. And a surprising amount of physical mocap acting as well. They did him, and the kid who plays Atreus is good too.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the same with The Last of Us. They do, a lot of that stuff is mocap. So it is a genuine acting role. It's not like, it isn't a sort of providing a voice for a video game. It is a full-blown motion capture role.
Yeah.
So it's quite interesting that.
Yeah, worth a go.
The other thing which popped up this week, which is not TV or game related, is the fact that the Disney theme park in California opened finally Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, which is this new Star Wars themed theme park, which apparently is the biggest park out of the three there, because they've got California Adventure, the main Disneyland park, and Galaxy's Edge, and apparently Galaxy's Edge is the largest one. But it looks fabulous. I mean, they sent us some drone footage of it flying through the park, the most empty you're ever going to see it, I think, because I mean, it's got a few people milling around, but I mean, it's going to be rammed. You basically can't book tickets now until, I think it's after the 23rd of June. It's completely booked until the 23rd of June.
We've decided after going to Tokyo Disneyland and Disney Sea, Dave, we've decided to go to all of the Disneylands. That's part of our, going to be a life goal for my wife and I. So we've got to go to Orlando, and then we've got to go to Hong Kong. And then hopefully by then they'll have opened another one, so we can go to that as well.
Yeah, well, if you're going to do Orlando and you want to do the Star Wars stuff, wait until August, because they're opening the Orlando one in August.
There you go.
So, yes. And then the California one is now open, although they've got two feature rides, one of them being the Millennium Falcon thing, which I'm sure you've seen if you've seen footage around. That is open at the beginning. There is another big feature ride, which is not opening until the end of the year. So, but you can go in, you can apparently build droids, you can build lightsabers. They've got, if you've ever been to the Harry Potter world where they had the ones that interact with things,
very cool.
You can wave them at the windows and you have the ones that can interact with stuff. Apparently the droids do the same sort of thing, because you can get little backpacks, so you can carry the droid after you've built it. You can carry the droid around in your backpack and it will interact with stuff around the park, I think.
Amazing.
And you can go in and build your own lightsaber. There's a full kind of lightsaber building school, and apparently they're like the $200 solid metal, like
the
not
good ones.
Cheap plastic thing. They're proper solid metal lightsabers. You can buy blue milk and green milk and
that's
exciting. Yeah, and all that stuff, so you can actually try that. It looks phenomenal, and I mean it looks just, the whole look of it is incredible. So yes, it will be something I will be going to at some point. I don't know when, but it will be something I will definitely go to at some point. There's more information about that and the park and all the stuff you can see there. That's all up on the website as well, if you want to go and see that. So that's enough stuff about what we've been doing. Let's move on to some TV and film news. TV and film news, we kick off with the renewals, cancellations and pickups as ever. We start off with a sad cancellation, although not entirely unexpected. Silicon Valley is coming to an end with its sixth season, which I love that show. It's hilarious. Yeah. It's really funny. And it is a decision by the production crew. It's a decision by the producers and the writers. It's not HBO cancelling it. So it is going to come to a proper end. Sixth season is going to come out later on this year, but that will be the last one. It's a slightly shorter run by one episode. I think it's 7 episodes and it's usually 8 to 10. So it is going to be a little bit shorter, but they've basically given them what they wanted to be able to finish it in a way they wanted to finish it. But I think it's about time, with that. I think it feels, 6 seasons feels about right. And there's only so many things I think you can sort of have him fail upwards only so many times.
That's right.
But it's a great show. Really, really good show. Humans, they announced, is not going to be returning for a fourth season, which I was kind of worried might be the case, but they have apparently decided that they're not going to bring it back. That does appear to be a financial decision between Channel 4 and AMC, which is a shame. Although this third season didn't really end on a cliffhanger. It did have a certain amount of closure to it. So, I mean, I don't feel too bad that it was kind of left on some massive cliffhanger or anything. It sort of felt like it did close out a little bit. But I was always happy to see more. I mean, you know the connection that we have with that show. I mean, you know, I've interviewed most of the cast. We've been on set. I appeared in that documentary thing with Gemma Chan. And, you know, so I love that series. And I am very sad to see it go. But, you know, I kind of thought when they hadn't announced a renewal yet, I kind of thought that might be the case. They have now confirmed it. He's not going to be back for a season four. So season three was the final one. There's an air date for Jessica Jones, finally, which will be the last thing to wrap up the Marvel Netflix deal. That is coming in the 14th of June. That will be the last Marvel TV show on Netflix.
And so sad.
Yeah, which is a shame. They may pop up somewhere else. They may pop up on the FX channels. They may pop up on Hulu. But it won't be for a few years because there is an exclusion deal with Netflix, so they can't move it anywhere else. Despite the fact that it was Netflix that cancelled them, they still can't move them anywhere else, which is a bit of a shame. But we'll have to wait and see with that, see whether they do pop up somewhere. As it is, that is it. So, yes, 14th of June for third and final season of Jessica Jones. And Alibi has picked up a couple of interesting little miniseries, which we have talked about one of them on here before, the Waco miniseries, which is about the Waco tragedy where David Koresh, who was a cult leader, had sort of gathered this group of people and the FBI basically stormed it and ended up with lots of people dying. So, interesting little miniseries about that, which stars Taylor Kitsch and Michael Shannon as well. And Melissa Bernist, aka Supergirl, is also in it. So worth going to watch that. They haven't said exactly when that's going to air, but it'll be on Alibi some point over the summer.
Supergirl and General Zod, interesting.
Yes, Supergirl. Well, yeah, Supergirl, TV Supergirl and General Zod from the movies. Yes, interesting. And then there is I Am the Knight, which stars Chris Pine and is directed by Wonder Woman's Patty Jenkins. Tells the gripping story of Fauna Hoddle, a teenage girl who is given away at birth and grows up outside Reno, Nevada. Fauna lives more or less comfortably with the mystery of her origin until one day she makes a discovery that leads her to question everything. As Fauna begins to investigate the secrets of her past, she meets a ruined reporter played by Chris Pine who is haunted by the case that undid him. Together they follow a sinister trail that swirls ever closer to the infamous Los Angeles gynecologist Dr. George Hodel, a man involved in some of the Hollywood darkest debauchery and possibly its most infamous unsolved crime, which is the Black Dahlia murder. So yeah, I mean, that one sounds interesting. And I mean, depends whether you like Chris Pine or not, I guess, but Patty Jenkins has proved herself to be a fabulous director with Wonder Woman. So could be one to watch out for. That's called I Am the Knight. And they've picked that up again, coming in summer. We don't know exactly when yet. So keep an eye out for that on the site. We'll put dates when they get launched. Moving on to slightly larger news, Downton Abbey's Jessica Brown Finlay is going to be joining Harry Lloyd and Alden Ehrenreich in the Brave New World series, which we've spoken a bit about the Brave New World series on here before. Are you aware of the books? I mean, it's probably something you might have been forced to read in school.
No, it is. I'm aware of the title rings a bell, but no, I don't think I've ever read them.
Yeah, so I mean, the book
sounds
is
like a what's his name, Arthur C. Clarke type situation.
Yeah, it is very much that sort of thing. I mean, the book is a absolute classic, and it is the type of thing that they do read in school because it's about a sort of dystopian society sort of thing. The TV version is written by David Weiner, Grant Morrison and Brian Taylor, and it's set in this futuristic utopian society where people are drugged to stay happy, but they also have a number of their freedoms removed, including prohibition on monogamy, privacy, money, family and history itself. So children are created and conditioned to play a specific role in society and split into various castes. So if you're born as a factory worker, you're kind of conditioned to like living in cities and have no interest in books and that sort of stuff. Yeah. The story set in New London follows Bernard Marx and Leanna Crown, who are played by Harry Lloyd and Jessica Brown Finlay. They are sort of looking for a bit of adventure outside the city. They venture out into a place called the Savage Savage Lands, which is doesn't have all these strict rules. They get stuck in the middle of this violent rebellion. They're rescued by somebody called John the Savage, which is Alden Ehrenreich's character, who ends up escaping back to New London with them. And then sort of things start to go terribly wrong in New London as well. So that's the basic sort of setup of it. It looks really, really interesting. We haven't got a UK pickup for it. It's going out on USA Network in America. So I think Sky One picks up some of the USA Networks, but then Amazon's picked some of them up as well, because Mr. Robot was a USA Network show, and then Last Ship was a USA Network show.
Oh, so, I mean, so they've probably got some good money to put into it then.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think Suits is a USA Network show as well. So,
Oh, great.
So, I mean, they're not short of cash. It's sure. Part of NBC Universal. As I say, don't know where that'll end up over here, but we'll have to keep an eye out for it. But
Sounds good.
Yeah, sounds good. The writers are interesting as well, because Grant Morrison and Brian Taylor are the people behind Happy, which is a fabulous, fabulous Netflix series if you've not watched that. The one about the sort of drunk cop and who ends up being befriended by a magical blue flying unicorn.
Yeah, I know.
Yes, it is brilliant.
And of course, Grant Morrison of comic book fame.
Yes, and Grant Morrison is a spectacular comic book writer. So, yeah, it's an interesting one for them to be adapting. And David Wiener, Homecoming, The Killing, Flesh and Bone, so he's got a decent set of stuff behind him as well. One to look out for, that Brave New World.
Great.
This one was an interesting one. It's Star Wars related, and it's only a rumour at the moment, but there's been kind of rumours floating around that they might be planning on doing some Old Republic stuff within the film world, which, have you played any of the Knights of the Old Republic games?
Yeah, bits and bobs, none to completion. So this is this is before Phantom Menace, right, in the timeline?
Way before. It's like, you know how the Game of Thrones prequel is like 3,000 years before? It's the same sort of thing with this. This is set in the Old Republic is like thousands of years before all the stuff we've seen before it. It was video games originally, and it sort of spawned out into various comic books and stuff as well they've done for it, but they've never actually put any of it on screen before. The person that appears to be writing it is the person behind Avatar and Shutter Island, who was the screenwriter Leeta Kalogridis. We're going to go with, again, I apologise if I butchered
solid.
Her name. Yes, it was reported in BuzzFeed that person is going to be writing a new movie, and he's close to completing the script. Now, we've got to kind of stitch a few things together here, because we know that the Game of Thrones people, Benioff and Weiss, who are the two people that were behind Game of Thrones, are the next trilogy to come out, or thought to be a trilogy. They're supposed to be the people that are taking control of the next movies. And if they're going to step away from the Skywalker saga, it sort of makes sense that they go some completely different direction. Yeah. So it's possible that the film that they're looking at, given that it is those guys and they know that sort of old, more kind of old school type of world. I mean, there's going to be technology in it, obviously, but it may be...
There's still lightsabers in that.
Yeah, there's still lightsabers. In fact, there's a lot more lightsabers on screen probably than you've seen before, because you are at the height of the kind of Old Republic and at the height of the Sith power as well. So I think that could be kind of interesting. We don't know that the script that she's allegedly writing is for those guys, but that would seem probable. That's the sort of connection that they're going to make. The movies are set to come out in 2022, 24 and 26, and it has been confirmed that the Game of Thrones showrunners are the people directing certainly the first one of those. I mean, if it goes horribly wrong, then they probably won't be directing the others, but those are the set dates for the next Star Wars movies. So we know that they're going to be directing the first one of those, and this seems like a likely possibility if it turns out to be correct. But I mean, I loved the video games. I thought the video games were really solid, and the role-playing game, they then released a MMO version of it as well, which isn't quite as good because it doesn't have the depth of story. It tries to do it and it does a reasonable job, but you've got to play with
that MMO framework. Yeah,
because you're sort of dealing with other people and you've got a certain amount of kill 10 rats type of quests and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
you have to deal with all that stuff. So this looked like it could be quite interesting. There was another quick story, which popped up today, actually. Speaking of sort of big movie franchises, you might have wondered what the Russo brothers are going to do now that they've done Avengers Endgame.
Completed Marvel.
Yes, completed Marvel. Now they've done with Endgame, you might wonder what they were going to do next. It seems that they went back and played a few games of cards, Magic the Gathering specifically, until one of them sat up and went, hang on a minute, this would make a great TV series. So, they've teamed up with Netflix. It's going to be an animated series, but they are making an animated series based on the Magic the Gathering franchise they announced today. They're saying they've sort of been a huge fan of the game ever since it was like first released in 1993. This is a proper passion project for them. The animation studio is a company called Octopi, who are going to be behind it. The writers are Henry Gilroy, who's worked on Star Wars Rebels and Star Wars Clone Wars, Jose Molina, who's worked on The Tick and Agent Carter. So solid writers behind it. But I thought
I'd love like a Yu-Gi-Oh style where they play the card game and it's all like heightened and the monsters are real and stuff. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do with it. I mean, they're saying they're talking about it will expand the world and all new storyline, expands the stories of the Planeswalkers, which are the unique magic wielding heroes and villains as they contend with state larger than any one world can hold. So that's the basic logline for it. But interesting. I mean, I was a huge fan of the card game. I haven't played it for a very long time, but I went through a definite period of collecting cards for Magic the Gathering. So I thought that was kind of an interesting one. And Russo's are on a roll at the moment, so, you know, can't be a bad thing. And lastly, ITV2 and Hulu, which is an interesting combination, have teamed up for a very interesting sounding comedy called Zomboat. And it's set in a canal boat in Birmingham with zombies.
Oh, great. Wow.
So the setup for it, when a zombie apocalypse is unleashed in Birmingham, sisters Kat and Joe, together with unlikely travel companions Sunny and Amar, must flee for their lives by canal boat. Joe has just returned from a season as a club rep and decided to move back in with her younger sister Kat, a computer game addict who buys into every conspiracy theory around. Joe struggled to take her sister seriously when Kat claims the zombie apocalypse is real and happening right now in Birmingham.
So, well, look, Dave, if it was going to start anywhere, I think we all...
Yes. It's Broad Street on a Saturday night, surely.
Yes, I've seen the apocalypse, Dave. It's coming.
So, I don't know. Interesting collection of ideas for this. It's very ITV2. I mean, it's very much the sort of British comedy that they like to do, aimed at that sort of audience. Leah Brotherhead, who was in White, Gold and Boy Meets Girl, played Kat. Hamza Jatua, who was in Doctor Who and Our Girl, plays Sunny. Ryan McKen, who was in Save Me in the State, plays Amar, and Cara Thorbold, who was in Crazy Hair, Downton Abbey, a whole bunch of other things, she plays Joe. So interesting collection of people. Cara is great, we've seen her in various things. I don't really know the other people, but comedy for a younger audience. What was the other thing they did? Was it Time Wasters? Where it was a sort of time travel thing in an elevator. And they did that, which has just gone out for a second season. So, they do this sort of stuff quite well. And I'm quite intrigued by it. We'll have to wait and see what it's like. But they haven't said when it's coming to screen, but presumably it's shooting around Birmingham. So if you happen to be in Birmingham to see some zombies, keep an eye out.
Great.
That's all the news for this week. Let's move on to the interview.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
As we mentioned earlier, the interview this week is with the cast and crew of Good Omens. So we talked to David Tennant, Michael Sheen, Adrian Adjorna, the director Douglas McKinnon, producer Rob Wilkins, writer Neil Gaiman, and randomly, because he was there and why wouldn't you talk to him, Monty Python legend Terry Gilliam.
Amazing.
Who actually, I mean, he does have some connection and was sort of, although wasn't involved in the writing, it's one of the many, many projects which he tried tried to bring to screen before and hadn't managed it. Good Omens was one of the things. Mm. So, and he knew Terry and he knows Neil and was sort of around when they were talking about making it into a TV show and stuff. So, so he was sort of appropriate that he was there. So we had a chat with all those guys. We sort of explained what the show was about earlier, so I don't need to go into that again. I should also mention these were done on the red carpet, so there is a bit of background noise, and I'm not the only voice you'll hear asking questions. I do ask a few questions, but there are many other people. They were trying to sort of cluster people together to make sure they got everybody through and everybody got to ask something. Here's the interview with these guys. We'll start off with the director, Douglas McKinnon.
Here's the first most obvious question. What is so special and beautiful about this story, and what were the biggest challenges and rewards of bringing it to screen in the way you have?
The story is so special because it tells a story about the modern world. It reflects it because it's really about how being polarized in politics and life doesn't get you very far. Whereas if an angel and a demon can get on together over the whole of time, then maybe the rest of us can get on together as well.
It's hard to imagine a better fit for that angel and demon than the devilishly talented David Tennant and the angelically wonderful Michael Sheen. Can you talk a little bit about both of them and a little bit more about their characters? Because it's a wonderful dynamic between them.
Well, Neil and Terry Pratchett actually wrote the characters as one character to start with, and then split them apart. And in a way, that's what it feels like when you see them on screen. It feels like it's two characters dancing around each other and trying to make it one. So that's what it was like.
Can you talk a little bit about the changes between the book and the screen version? Because obviously, particularly John Hamm's character, a bit more expanded than other things, have hit the floor.
Yeah, Neil felt like most of the book translates pretty straightforwardly into the screen, but he also felt like he wanted to build on some of the structures and the hierarchies, and one of them was the relationship between God and Beelzebub, between the devil and Beelzebub, and then between God and the Archangel Gabriel. And also, we just wanted John Hamm.
In terms of the scenes, obviously, it's astonishing visually. Fans will have things they're excited to see on screen. What are you most excited for fans of the book to see realised on screen? Is there a particular episode or sequence that you think is the highlight of the series for you?
I think the fans will love things like the seance, and I think they'll love things like Crowley driving the car when it's on fire. And I think those are amazing things. And also the bookshop goes on fire, which everybody's all worried about. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they react to that.
Curious. I mean, in terms of those effects, how much of it was practical, and did you have any particularly near apocalyptic experiences on set?
No, the big secret of stunts like that is to make them look dangerous and not be dangerous. We've got a whole mixture of real effects plus CGI in a way that you couldn't have done a few years ago in television, but which we did to a great extent on this.
Talk about how special and poignant it is to have people like Terry and Neil behind the camera. And obviously, I mean, Terry, not able to see it today with us, but I mean, do you think you'd be very proud and happy with what you've done with his work?
I never had the privilege of meeting Terry, but I'm told by all concerned that he would have loved what we've done. So that's good enough for me.
So that was director Douglas McKinnon. Next up, we have one of the producers, Rob Wilkins.
It's wonderful to have you with us tonight. I think the first most obvious question, can you talk about the challenges and rewards of taking this iconic story and adapting it for this miniseries?
The challenge is, it turns out that Good Omens just happens to be just about everybody's favourite book. So Michael Sheen's favourite book, John Hamm's favourite book. That's quite a responsibility. And then you've got a crew. You've got a crew of hundreds, and it's a beloved book to all of those people, those guys as well. So obviously, you want to do your best by the book. So the biggest challenge is the book. Every day was the book. And having Terry Pratchett sitting on your shoulder telling you not to mess up, that was a challenge for me personally.
I mean, of all of the great creative output that those two geniuses have given us, why do you think this one is, like you say, for so many actors, so many storytellers, one that they latch onto, one that means so much to them?
That's a great question. It's a really accessible book and it's a really accessible show. So I think that's why. The book reads like a movie. A very hard to adapt movie, but it reads like a movie. And in fact, for me, now is the only time and the only place in time and space where it could have happened, because TV being what it is now with the streamers allowing us to make a 6-hour movie. So that's a very important thing for me, very important thing, that only now could we have done this amazing thing.
Talking of it being somewhat like a movie, I mean, the premiere of this size,
Did you ever think you'd see something like that for a TV show rather than a film? Because this is a full-blown movie premiere.
This is entirely a fully blown movie premiere, and there's David Tennant just over there doing his stuff. No, did I ever expect this? No. I thought we might have a cast and crew screening. I thought we might have something for our families. I never expected this ever. Thank you, Amazon. Thank you, BBC. This is incredible.
You're talking about David and Michael. It's hard to imagine this series existing without them. Can you talk a little bit about the unique qualities they both have as performers that make them such a perfect fit, both together and for these characters?
Yeah, absolutely. The unique fit above anything else is the magic that they created between them. So they'd been in the same movie together, but they'd never acted together. And within 20 minutes of our read-through, these guys were just singing together, dancing together. It was absolutely beautiful. You'll see it on the screen. It's a proper beautiful magic. We couldn't have expected anything else. We couldn't have expected anything more. It is incredible. The magic that they create is fantastic.
Can you talk about the visual magic? Because I think obviously the look and feel of the series, even just from the trailer, seems like something quite special.
The look of it looks like a movie. It looks like a very, very expensive movie. And yet there's 6 hours of it on TV. That's incredible. We have been very, very blessed with a wonderful production designer, Michael Ralph, who's created this wonderful look for Good Omens. We couldn't be happier. It's unbelievable.
Particularly some of the differences between the series and the book, because obviously particularly John Hamm's character, Gabriel, is much expanded upon in this version.
Absolutely. Well, there's always going to be things that we would have to lose out of the book to make it fit. So even if you've got 6 hours, you'd want 7 hours or 8 hours or 9 hours. So you would always want more time. So some things had to be cut. But to make certain things more coherent, some characters had to be melded together. And in fact, the Angel Gabriel was a character that Neil and Terry had spoken about during the writing of Good Omens. But in the writing of the screenplay, Neil needed somebody to fit that bill. Somebody at head office, the really pedantic boss, however hard you're trying, he always wants you to try harder. And that's Gabriel.
So that was producer Rob Wilkins. Now we come to writer Neil Gaiman, who wrote the whole series and was also co-author of the book with Terry Pratchett.
Can you talk a little bit about, for you, what the heart of this story is and how proud you are to see it realised on screen finally in this beautiful way?
The heart of the story was Terry Pratchett and I getting together over 30 years ago and deciding to write a novel about an angel and a demon working together to stop the apocalypse from happening, to stop Armageddon. And because we liked the world, both of us, Terry and me, and we thought it was a really good place and it was worth saving. And we wanted to write about that. What's happened since, Terry, we tried to make it into a film for many years. Terry Gilliam tried to make it into a film. Then Terry Gilliam actually suggested we make it into a TV show. We looked for somebody to do it for us. We couldn't find anybody. And finally, about 5 years ago, Terry said, he wrote me a letter and he said, you have to do this. I know how busy you are, but you have to write it and make a show that I can watch before the lights go out. And I said, okay. And then Terry died, which meant suddenly this had become a last request. So I came back from Terry's funeral and started to write the first episode. And it took 2 years to get to the point where we started shooting. And it took 2 years to get from there to now, because it was a long, long shoot. And then almost a year of post-production. There's so much CGI, special effects, amazing things. And now I'm here absolutely dazed and looking around at a green carpet, this first ever Leicester Square premiere for a TV show, and I'm just so proud of what we brought to the world.
Michael Sheen and David Tennant are starring as your leads in this. What made you decide that they were the right ones to play the demon and the angel?
I've known Michael for about a decade. Michael was actually there with me when Terry Gilliam suggested we do it for television. I started sending Michael the scripts as I was writing them just for comments. Somewhere in there I thought maybe he'd make a good Crowley. And then I realized as I was writing it that I wanted David Tennant for Crowley and I wanted Michael for Aziraphale. And Michael and I had an incredibly awkward and embarrassing dinner when I had to break it to him that I wanted him to be Aziraphale, not Crowley, and he was a little too nervous to break to me that he'd read the scripts and didn't want to play Crowley but really wanted to play Aziraphale. So we were very, very awkward at each other for most of the meal, and finally I explained and he was like so relieved, and I had my Crowley, and then we approached David and we had our Aziraphale, and I thought, now I need my angel Gabriel, and I wrote an email to John Hamm because I knew that he'd been a fan of Good Omens when he was at school, and he said yes. And really, I mean, I have the world's greatest cast here, and I have it because pretty much everybody we asked said yes. If they could do it, they said yes. So we got the Derek Jacobis, Miranda Richardson, Adria Arjona. We got Mark Gatiss and all of the League of Gentlemen come in and just do these wonderful little parts for us. It's so glorious.
So that was Neil Gaiman. Now we come to the Monty Python legend, Terry Gilliam.
Terry, as one of our favourite storytellers, I'm curious what you think makes people like Neil and Terry Pratchett such iconic and important storytellers.
Well, they're important and iconic because I like their work. That's why. It's as simple as that. I mean, it was years ago when Neil, Terry, and I met, and we were talking about doing Good Omens as a film. And I spent quite a bit of time. We wrote a script, cinema script. Johnny Depp was going to be in it, Robin Williams. But in a strange way, it's better to be a six-part television series because we had to throw out so much of the book to squeeze into 2 hours and 10 minutes. So I'm excited to see what they've done.
I'm curious, obviously, you're famous not just for the wonderful films you've made, but for the unfortunate times when you haven't got to make them. I'm curious where you put Good Omens in that list of disappointments in terms of films that you didn't quite get to have the chance to explore.
Yeah, I think it would have been nice because I actually did a lot of interesting storyboards that I don't think will be in what we're watching tonight, because I thought quite a bit about it, and I think their work was so good. To read the book the first time was astonishing, and then to find out that Hollywood studios had no interest in it, even though it had sold millions by then, and that's been part of the problem with dealing with Hollywood. So, and I was with Johnny Depp before Pirates of the Caribbean. So,
I'm curious, what is it about Good Omens that interests you? Because I think, obviously, I mean, there's a lot of nuance and layers to it, but what is it that most speaks to you about that story?
Well, I mean, representatives of heaven, hell, having a good time on Earth, and suddenly along comes the Antichrist, and it spoils all the fun they've been having. I mean, I love the fact they were like these two characters who one represented heaven, one hell, and they found a little quiet island somewhere called Earth, and they were having a wonderful time. They divided up the place, and each got to do what they wanted to do, and as long as they keep this going, life was great. And then along comes Armageddon. Always ruins everything. Armageddon has always been a ruiner of good parties.
No.
There it is. Violence.
Now Amazon have decided to make one of Terry Pratchett's books. Is there another one that you would like to try and approach now?
Not at the moment. I'm looking for something to do. I don't know what I'm going to do next. Now I've got Coyote out of my system. I'm looking around, but I think what I liked about Good Omens more than many of the other books, it the combination of Neil and Terry became more interesting. Because Terry's world is very complete. But with Neil in there, it started getting pulled apart in different ways. And that's what I liked about it.
I'm curious, Terry. I mean, Don Quixote was obviously something that you fought so hard for. Can you describe your feelings now that you've finally scratched that itch?
Well, it's done, and I think it's a wonderful film. That's what was nice. Fuck the audience. I was just interested in would I be satisfied at the end of the day, and I am. So, no, and the reactions are great. It's really good. So I'm happy. My problem is it has been part of my life for so long. There's a big void there. I don't know what to do now. But anyway, that part of my life is finished. That's a good bit.
I think obviously with this, I guess my final question, people have been very quick, talking about reactions and audiences, people have been very quick to project political symbolism onto this story. Yeah. Do you think that's making it harder to tell stories, the fact that people want to tie it too closely to politics and the real world and those kinds of things?
People can do what they want. I like making, and I like what other people do, making films and TV that can be read by different people in different ways. I think that's wonderful. People always project their own idea of the world onto whatever they see. So good luck to them.
From Terry Gilliam, we move on to the stars of the show, starting with Adria Ajorna, who you might know from the TV show Emerald City, where she played Dorothy. She was Emily in True Detective. She also has popped up in films like Pacific Rim as well.
And then I guess the obvious question to start with, can you tell us, for people who aren't fans of this original source material, a little bit about your character and where she fits into this astonishing world?
Yes, Anathema Devise is a descendant of Agnes Nutter, and she kind of lives her life through these prophecies, and she's not very good at following them, but has kind of had the dictation her whole life of what was going to happen. And the big question is kind of, is she going to live her life as this descendant and continue knowing what's going to happen, and or try to discover what's going to happen, or is she really going to start living by what her heart tells her and her own opinions? And I kind of really like that about her. She's, I think, the first time I've played a role where I'm not the girlfriend enough, or the nurse, or the this. Anathema really is a well-rounded character, and I think Neil is brilliant at writing female characters, and I'm so lucky.
Can you talk a little bit about what excited you most overall about this story, and what fans can expect from the series as a whole?
I think what excited me the most was that I was able to play a woman that was well-rounded and had desires and was doing something. It was actually propelling the story forward. That was really exciting, working with Michael and David and John and all these incredible actors. I mean, it was one after the other, and being able to work with Neil and Doug, all of those things were exciting. And I think the fans are really going to see that book that they once imagined in their head come to life in such an exciting and thrilling way. And for people that haven't seen the book, I think it's a story that is so relatable, and it has no age. I showed it to my 9-year-old brother, I showed it to my grandmother, and they all seemed to love it. So that, I think that's...
Last question. You mentioned Michael and David, obviously astonishing chemistry on screen. What were your fondest memories being with them on set?
Because I'm not with them all the time, I saw them a lot in hair and makeup together, and they're just really, they're kind of the same. They work symbiotically really cool, and they're just really funny and kind, and I don't know, we just had such a good time. It's hard, we also filmed this 2 years ago, so now it's hard for me to remember, but they're amazing.
And finally, we have the two leading stars, David Tennant and Michael Sheen.
Tell us a little bit about each of your characters and what makes them individually and collectively such a fascinating duo.
Well, I play the angel Aziraphale.
Yes, and I play the demon Crowley.
And they have both been on Earth representing their respective head offices since the Garden of Eden. I've been trying to keep mankind on the straight and narrow.
Yeah, and I've been trying to corrupt it. But as the millennia go on, they realize that actually they could help each other out, as effectively they cancel each other out anyway. Yeah. They can do what they need to do and slightly cut down the workload.
So they help out the other team when they're busy, so
yeah,
to speak.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it turns out that the end times are coming because this one is charged with bringing the Antichrist into the world.
Yes. So therefore I say, listen, we're about to lose our cushy number living on Earth and enjoying all the things that mortals enjoy, like wine and nice dinners.
Yes.
So we set out to make sure that we can live on Earth, that Earth can continue, and that we don't have to give up all of the niceties we've come to enjoy.
So we try and avert the apocalypse.
Yeah.
Angel, demon, work together to avert the apocalypse.
Yeah. There's your tagline.
There you go.
You're looking so fantastic in your suits. I'm loving them. In terms of swapping roles, did you ever think about, I know you had wanted, you know, you were going to play the demon. Did you ever feel like you wanted to swap roles throughout the series?
I was never going to play the demon. There was a sort of misunderstanding between me and Neil that we thought each other thought that I was going to play that part. And I thought, I'm not good enough to play that part. So we found someone good enough, thank goodness, to actually pull it off.
No, I think it was, Michael was always on board. So I just read the script and thought, what a fantastic part. And I get to play opposite Michael Sheen. And what could be finer?
You guys haven't worked together previously. Did you enjoy the experience?
Sorry, say that again.
You guys have worked together previously, been in the same movie, but did you enjoy
the experience? We were in Bright Young Things that Stephen Fry directed, but we've never had any scenes together. And we've known each other for a long time, and I've been a huge fan. David's work. So when we came to be able to act together, you never know how it's going to go until you actually start doing it. But it was sort of beyond my wildest dreams.
It was like an angel and demon. Was it as much fun as it looked? Also, there's a bit of a bromance going on there.
Oh, yes. Well, I think my angel has got a lot of devil in him. And David's demon has got a good soul.
Yes, he's not that bad, really.
Yeah.
They complete each other. They are the yin to each other's yang.
You had me at hell. Hey? How about that?
But it is, you're right, it's a buddy movie, really. They are bound together through all eternity.
They're sort of the ultimate odd couple.
Yeah,
it's got a rom-com thing to it, you know.
It does.
You've got these
bit.
Two characters who sort of don't get along to begin with, so you know they're going to end up in each other's arms psychologically speaking.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah.
Does that mean you had a little fun offset together as well?
Well, we did on the days when it was just me and David, which was a lot, we would have a lovely time just hanging out. But then we'd have these amazing actors, some of which are here tonight, who would pop in every now and again, and then it was just like a party.
Yes, it just sort of kept getting better and better, the people that kept turning up. And even after we finished filming, then other people were coming on and being part of the show. It just sort of kept going and going and going. When I finally saw one of the episodes and the credits come up at the start, there were actors in that I didn't even know we had in the show who got added in later. It's an incredible roll call.
Also an added pressure, because obviously it was one of the late Sir Terry Pratchett's final wishes that would have been made. Was there pressure for you guys?
Well, I think Neil took that very, very seriously as a sort of last wish of Terry's. So Terry was very present throughout the filming of it. And in fact, I believe his hat and scarf are going to be in the audience tonight. So he's sort of with us tonight at the premiere as well. So I think that was, Neil really took that on board. And I think we felt as well, it's hard not to feel the pressure of all the fans of the book. It's so beloved, and I'm one of them, you know. I read it 30 years ago when it first came out, and so to be able to be part of bringing it to the screen felt like a huge responsibility, but it was just a joy, really, in the end. It's so beautifully written. There's so many amazing people in it. We just had a real laugh.
I think because Neil had written the scripts and was sure running the whole thing, that took the pressure off us to an extent, because it felt like, well, yes, this book is beloved, and yes, it has a huge expectation and desire to see this adaptation, but we've got the boss here, or one of the bosses, you know. So if any decision we made, as long as Neil approved it, we knew we were on relatively safe ground.
Yeah.
And finally, those contact lenses.
Mm.
What were they about?
They were so bad. I wear contact lenses anyway, and they had my prescription, and so that helped. In the desert in South Africa, they got a little dry.
I felt for you.
They got a little dry that day. A little
sanguine
gritty.
In them. He was very brave. He was a very brave soldier.
I was terribly,
he won't say it himself,
brave.
But he was.
So that was the interview with the cast and crew of Good Omens. I hope you really enjoyed that. As I said before, Good Omens is out on Amazon Prime right now. It's 6 episodes. If you haven't got Amazon Prime, it should be coming to the BBC at some point. They haven't said when yet, but it will be coming to the BBC at some point at a later date. So if you don't want to get Amazon Prime, which you should because it's awesome, but go and then you can wait around. There's some amazing stuff coming up on Amazon Prime.
My wife and I have been watching The US Office, which we'd never seen before, but it's really terrific. It's all on Amazon Prime.
All on Amazon Prime. And you've got The Boys coming out this month as well.
Yes.
Which looks fabulous, which is same people behind Preacher, with the addition of the creator of Supernatural, Eric Kripke, in charge of it. And that looks amazing. So I'm very much looking forward to that. So there's lots of good things on Amazon Prime. I would urge you to, even if you kind of go and do a trial for a month or whatever it is, and then turn it off if that's the case. If you can't get through 6 episodes in a month, then, you know. Yes, worth going to get on there. But failing that, if you really don't want to do it, you can't afford it, go and wait for it to come up on the BBC. It will be there. Now on to some highlights for next week on TV. So, highlights for next week on TV. And June suddenly, over the last sort of couple of weeks, become a really, really solid month for TV. We'll kick off with Happy. That is coming back on the 5th of June. That's amazing, amazing TV series. It's bonkers and I love it to bits. But season 2 of Happy, 5th of June for that. The Blacklist back finally for its 6th season. That's on the 5th of June as well. That's at 9 p.m. on Sky One. Black Mirror is back for a 5th season. Well, I say 5th season, it's 3 episodes, but more Black Mirror is always good. So that's back on the 5th of June as well. So 5th of June is going to be very busy. Designated Survivor back for a third series. That's on the 7th of June. That's a great show as well. So you can go watch that. Kiefer Sutherland as the president. Killing Eve back on the 8th of June for its second season. Finally, we've had millions of comments of like, when's Killing Eve coming back? Now it is coming back. Basically, they let it run out in BBC America because they wanted to put it on as a box set, much to the annoyance of everybody in the UK. It was a stupid idea. I don't know why they wanted to do it that way, but that's what they decided to do. So coming to BBC Three as a box set from the 8th of June, but it will be going out weekly as well. So you can find it all on iPlayer, but it will be going out weekly from the 8th of June at 9:15 on BBC One. Fans of prison drama Wentworth Prison. Wentworth is back for its seventh season on Five Star. That is on the 8th of June at 10 p.m. That is back. Handmaid's Tale landed out of nowhere. That is back for its third season on the 9th of June at 9 p.m. That starts. So very much looking forward to that coming back because that's an amazing show. Looked really interesting this year. Big Little Lies, second season of that. That is coming on the 10th of June at 2 a.m. and then it will be at 9 p.m. on its regular slot as well. But they are similar casting it with the US because it's become such a big show. So Big Little Lies season 2, that's coming to Sky Atlantic 10th of June. And Blackish back for its fifth season on E4. That is on the 10th of June at 7:30. So some massive shows just all
where
landed
will we
in
find
one week.
The time?
I know, and I will be on holiday when most of these start as well. So that's annoying. So I'm going to have to do some major catching up. See if I can download a few things that kind of dropped just before I go away and pile them up on a pad so I can take them with me. Awesome. So that's everything for this week. Unless you've got anything else you'd like to add.
No, that's great. Just make sure you check out that Geek Town Instagram for all that cosplay goodness. I'm sure Dave will read out the tag in a second.
Yes, that's yes, lots of stuff going up on there for the next couple of weeks. I'm not entirely sure what we're going to do show wise because I'm away again a couple of weeks. We may do interview shows. I'm not entirely sure, but I will let you know when they go up. For all the information throughout the rest of the week though, you can go to geektown.co.uk and see all the latest air date info. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk, leave a message on the website post, find us at geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram for all your cosplay photos. That's Geektown UK. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
Bye. Bye.